Eventually, all came to the following number. Between 3% to 4% of the fuel was thrown out of the first block reactor. But during that period, it created quite a tense situation. The operative group itself, however, didn't show any tension at all. They just constantly performed more measurements, more elaborations, and tried their best to understand the actual conditions. Nikolai Ivanovich Ryshkov had been at the Chernobyl power plant many times. The operative group had to take many decisions about accepting or rejecting the foreign aid, which was offered during this period of time. I wanted to say that out loud, but now, recalling those days of May, I must say that after Ryshkov and Ligachev had visited the disaster sites and assessed the situation, received a command that the composition of the government commission should be changed. Boris Evdokimovich Cherbina remained the leader of the government commission, but a decision was made that all further work on site would be performed by a second group. While the first group would leave for Moscow, the second group would be on site and would be led by the chairman of the Ministry Council, Ivan Stefanovich Silaev. The entire group of the first government commission departed, but Cherbina suggested that Comrade Sidorenko and I would stay back for a while in order to finish our tasks. Sidorenko had to investigate the causes of the accident, and I had to finish the localization work on the fourth block. Formally, however, I had to be replaced in Silaev's team by Evgeny Pietrovich Ryazantsev, deputy director for a Nuclear Energy Institute. Then, unexpectedly, Evgeny Pavlovich Velikov also appeared in the group, even though I don't know exactly under whose command. I must add a few words here. Evgeny Pavlovich Velikov, apparently having seen the movie The China Syndrome, came to Chernobyl with a fear which I reported to Ryshkov and Ligachev. We were worried about the uncertainty of the geometric position of the reactor's residues. It was clear that the heat was still being generated inside the fuel mass. The heating up could continue, and some vertical movement of this fuel mass may occur. In particular, we were worried about two things: whether the movement would cause critical mass buildup in some area, which would produce short-living isotopes. This was our first thing to worry about. However, we were hoping that the large amounts of boron, about 40 tons, that were dropped into the reactor would be more or less evenly mixed with the fuel and help prevent critical mass buildup. However, we could not fully eliminate the possibility that such local reactors would appear. That was the first problem, and the second threat was that the temperatures could be dangerously high within these masses. Some of the construction elements in the lower part of the reactor may not withstand that. Concrete may fall due to high temperatures. Part of the fuel can get into the bubbler pools, be it the lower or the upper ones, and we did not know at the time whether there was any water inside or not. We fear that if a considerable amount of fuel gets inside, then a powerful vaporization would carry out additional radioactive aerosols and contaminate additional areas. We were really concerned about these problems. That's why, along with Ivan Stefanovich Silaev, who by this time had replaced Rubina, decided to first get some information about the levels of water in the lower bubbler pools. This was a difficult task, which was fulfilled heroically by the station personnel. Then it turned out that there was indeed water there, so the necessary measures were taken to remove the water. I want to stress that out once more. We removed the water just to avoid massive vaporization. It was absolutely clear to us that an explosion was not possible. Only evaporation that would carry out radioactive particles, that's all. so just in case the water should be removed. And if the fuel mass would melt its way down into these rooms, we could pump the water back there to cool the molten fuel masses. These decisions were accepted and written down in session protocols. But then Evgeny Pavlovich appeared and started talking about this China syndrome and those bubbler pools lower and the upper ones, that they could melt through and some fuel could get through them into the soil and then into the groundwater. The groundwater was only 32 meters deep under the Chernobyl station. In this particular aspect, the station was rather poorly placed. Should the fuel get there, it would contaminate a considerable amount of water in Ukraine. The likelihood of such an event was extremely low. Nevertheless, as a preventive measure, and after some debate, the work to prevent this was approved, despite most specialists being in doubt whether it was needed or not. Nevertheless, Evgeny Pavlovich insisted on performing this work, which consisted in constructing a concrete bed under the reactor. To accomplish this, miners worked very hard, led personally by the Minister of Coal Industry, Comrade Sharadin, and his specialists, led by Comrade Brezhnev from the Ministry of Special Heavy Machine Building, who created the required tunnels under the fourth block. These tunnels were to be used to construct that concrete bed, which had a cooling feature. This job was constructed and built in a very short period, but was completely useless, because no fuel got there and nothing had to be cooled. Somewhere around the 10th day of May, Vyacheslav Dmitrievich Svetly arrived, who was called by Velikov. Svetly brought a case with samples of various materials that had been melted using a laser or burned by some fuel mass at a deep distance. All of this had some psychological effect on Ivan Stefanovich Zilayev, which authorized the works. All in all, these measures were excessive, but at that time it was understandable that they were preventive just in case some mass got through by accident. This also had a considerable psychological effect on the population, demonstrating that measures were being taken to protect the groundwater. But from my point of view, the reason why I was neither an active supporter and neither an opposer of it was because these jobs would require a lot of machinery to be concentrated in the zone. It was clear to me that there was a huge amount of work needed to be done to build a shelter for Unit 4. To do this, it was necessary to work out methods to deliver the concrete and test what types of vehicles would be the best suited for the job within those conditions. Vehicle decontamination sites had to be organized, and it had to be ascertained if they could even be fully decontaminated. What conditions should be prepared for the people that would work on that site, and for how long should they stay there? And because the sarcophagus projects were just in the beginning of design stage, it was not clear what kind and how much equipment was needed. Also, it was more or less clear how to construct that concrete plate under the reactor. I thought it was very important in this preemptive stage that I began to measure the supply for the people, to create proper living conditions for them, to gather experience for such a large-scale work organization. For all of these, it seemed that all the decisions were correctly taken. But there was an entirely different case when Evgeny Pavlovich proposed to construct another such plate under the wreck that was outside of the fourth block. And it seemed to him that there was also a lot of fuel. For this, he would have to allocate another 10,000 subway builders, get them here to do that work. In this case, I could not support this idea, so I wrote a very angry letter together with Anatoly Pavlovich, where we strongly objected this excessive allocation of people who would get higher radiation doses when constructing that second plate. Of course, there was no basis whatsoever to carry out such a work, because we more or less knew where most of the radioactivity was distributed around each reactor zone. water protection became one of our most important problems immediately around the month of May. Because the Pripyat River by itself formed a considerable water reservoir, but even more, it was flowing straight into the Dnieper River. Well, one does not have to explain more about the importance of the Dnieper River. The subsoil waters were shallow under the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. So after it became clear that the casualties of this accident were limited to around few hundreds of people, while tens of people were heavily injured and all the rest were curable, the main problem was to secure the population living along the Dnieper Basin. This was sort of central, very important task, and of course, water contamination measurements were carried out constantly.